O'Connor Reel 4. Another of the features of the campaign that interests me is that, in a sense, there was a process taking place during which you were operating with the infantry tanks as the main breakthrough force on which most of the operations relied for their success. Now, as the campaign progressed with great success, your infantry tank force got smaller and smaller and smaller, it being eroded for many reasons. And at the same time as your infantry tank got smaller, in some ways the Italian defences were getting stronger, in the sense that you were having to operate against major fortresses like Tobruk.
Yeah.
I wonder to what extent you had to readjust your plans as the campaign progressed to take account of the gradual erosion of this essential force.
Well, we didn't, in fact. We started the Battle of Sidi Brani with, I think, 54 tanks, I-tanks, and I'm talking about them the whole time. And gradually, as you say, we lost during the Battle of Sidi Brani, we lost a number, not disabled completely, but requiring repair. And then, at the end of the Battle of Sidi Brani, the only thing that can be said in his favour was that we had this month's pause due to the 4th Indian Division being taken away from us. It gave time for those tanks to be repaired and replaced. And so we started really with quite a good supply of tanks for Balia, which they were required very much, and to a lesser extent at Tobruk. And so as things turned out, it wasn't as bad as it seemed as it might have been.
I believe I'm right in saying that by the time you got to Tobruk,
yes,
your infantry tank force was down to only 12 operational machines.
I don't know the exact number, but I should say that was quite possible.
Yes.
But fortunately, none of the operations that followed that, did we really want them.
But even so, it strikes me as paradoxical that by the time you got to Tobruk, which was probably the most strongly defended of the fortresses you had to attack, by the time you got there, your I-tank force was reduced to this relatively tiny number.
It's quite true. But in actual fact, the Battle of Tobruk was nothing like as severe as the Battle of Balia. It's quite true that Tobruk is stronger in a way than Balia, but they'd had such a hammering, the enemy, that they didn't put up half the fight in Tobruk as they did in Balia, and we didn't require the tanks nearly as much. We got away without necessity of them being in the numbers they were in the original battle.
Mm. I wonder how you might have fared if the Italian resistance at Tobruk had been as rigorous as it had been at Bardia.
Well, I think we'd have got there all right, but it would have taken longer, probably.
Now, from the outset of the Libyan campaign, most of the battles were, as we've already discussed, mm-hmm. based on the initial breakthrough by the infantry tank forces.
Yeah.
Yet if one looks at the comparative strengths of the Allied and the Italian forces, one is impressed by the very much larger numbers of tanks which the Italians had at their disposal. How was it that at the time you were planning and carrying out these operations, you were sufficiently confident that the quality of the Allied armoured forces would overcome the quantitative disadvantage?
Well, I think we had to plan against it. The two points I mentioned before were, one was surprise, you see, that was very vital, and the other one was concentration at the point where we were able to concentrate at the point where we could We were in a larger force than they were and could annihilate them before they could get reinforcement. It was really, to a great extent, their faulty tactical dispositions that made it possible.
It also suggests to me that you must have had a fairly low regard for the efficiency and effectiveness of the Italian 10th Army.
Yes, we had, I think, and undoubtedly, shall I say that we thought that we were very much better than they were, and that our training and the fact that we gained for ourselves the initiative, and that surprise above everything was important, we felt very confident that provided we used our troops properly, that we'd win. I think if we had made mistakes and had made a bad tactical plan, that we'd have had great difficulty because of the great superiority in their numbers, as you say.
Can you remember what your estimation of the Italian fighting ability was at the time? I mean, what was the attitude of senior British commanders to the Italians?
Oh, I can tell you exactly. I mean, we had 3 months fighting or something like that in a small way in the day after the declaration of war. And they varied, but the some were very poor and some were not so poor. Remember, there were a lot of African troops they had, and they were, some of them were quite good. But generally speaking, as a result of the fighting that we'd had during those small operations from the commencement of war until our main operation, we felt that we were well able to deal with them, and we were prepared to take on larger numbers, provided we could gain surprise.
Do you regard then these operations which preceded the main campaign as being particularly important from this point of view of enabling you to assess the capabilities of the Italians?
They weren't undertaken with that point of view. They were undertaken as a necessary, really, to show that we intended to be aggressive. And it gave us that information as a result of these operations.
Do you think that your attitude to the Italians at the time was influenced by your earlier experiences of fighting with them during the First World War?
It was certainly confirmed by that. They were on our side in the First War, but I was quite closely connected with them, and on the whole, they weren't great fighters. And again, I still go on and say this time after time that surprise was the whole thing. And if one could exercise real surprise and against people who really weren't at all keen on the war, they were quite liable to chuck their hand in.
One of the factors which is mentioned in a number of the accounts of the North African campaigns as being important to the results of the fighting was that the Italians were not very good desert fighters, whereas the Allied forces on the whole were. This gives the impression, I think, that there are some kind of special skills which are unique to desert operations, which somehow the Allied forces had and the Italians didn't. Would this be an accurate representation of the facts?
I don't really think so. I think that well-trained troops will very soon adapt themselves to any area, any type of ground, or whether it's trenches or desert or anything else. And provided they're well-trained, they'd very quickly become masters of their craft as much as anywhere else.
So there was, you think, nothing peculiar about the nature of desert fighting?
No, I mean, it's different. As it might be attacking a fortress. You want well-trained troops who realize what they're up against and are prepared to adopt the best methods of dealing with it. I mean, nothing could have been more difficult than trench-to-trench fighting. I mean, in the First War, terribly difficult. But eventually we got a technique for it, mainly with the help of the tanks. And provided the troops are well trained, they can be trained to anything. And it doesn't matter what the terrain is.
Another point which sometimes comes over from some of the written accounts is that there were extremes of hardship involved in desert operations.
Which were absent from others.
That's right, and which the Allies were well prepared to accept, whereas the Italians weren't.
I don't honestly think that's so. There were times of extreme hardship, and undoubtedly, not in the first campaign, but in the Battle of El Alamein and so on, there were a few days of intense hardship. But I don't think, really, that it was worse in the desert campaign than anything that happened in the, for instance, the First War.
So it would be the case then that the conditions under which your forces were fighting during the First Libyan campaign were not, in your judgment, severely hard.
They were not harder than I really led to expect. I mean, there were obviously hard, difficult occasions and times when we were short of food and short of water and had rather salted water. But all those things were not things that were completely knocked you out. And though at times I think things were very hard, and of course I was at a headquarters then and not in the front line like I was in the First War. I think that it would be wrong to say that the desert fighting was more intense or more difficult or more hard to endure than the fighting in the First War. I personally much prefer the second of the two.
Now, after the Battle of Biedefom, with the virtual destruction of the Italian 10th Army, how did you assess the possibilities of a further successful advance to Tripoli?
Well, I thought if it was the intention to do so, that we could have kept Tripoli without any difficulty, without any great difficulty. But we should have found it difficult to maintain because of the very great increase in the German air force that came and made things very unpleasant in that part of the world. But as far as getting there, I feel certain that we could have got there very shortly.
On what evidence or factors was that opinion based?
Well, personally, by the fact that we completely liquidated the enemy, and that there were no other troops in the way of nothing to stop us really, and there was no big fortifications or anything to take on the way, so I feel sure that we would have got there. And from hindsight, in reading what Hitler said, that he was referring to following up the British after one of their defeats in the desert, and he said, "Don't for one second relax your determination against all odds to follow up. Don't be like the British, who had a chance of getting to Tripoli and didn't take it."
Do you think at the time that Wavell and Churchill were aware of the ease with which Tripoli might possibly have been taken if you had continued your
offensive? No, I don't think so. I don't think that Wavell ever was very much in favour of Tripoli.
But was he aware of Was he aware of the ease with which it might have been done?
No.
Well, why was that?
Because I think, really, everything was centred on, which was getting near its climax, everything was settled, concentrated on the preparation of the operations for Greece. And the fact that in the course of an afternoon, the Battle of Bedafont, that the whole strategical situation was changed, couldn't possibly sink into GHQ and get results sufficiently quick to make a change of a strategical plan. Churchill did, if you remember, send a telegram to Wavell saying, "Now don't undertake this unless you're sure that there's a reasonable chance of success. We don't want another retirement to Dunkirk."
Mm.
He said that.
Mm.
"And if you feel that it's not going to produce a dividend, don't do it."
What efforts did you make at the time to press for the continued advance to Tripoli?
I find that, again, very difficult. It wasn't my business, really, to do anything that's going to hinder the Greek operations. And it was no doubt the Greek operations were going to paid out. The Greek operations were going to take place. It seemed to me that the Tripoli situation was unlikely to happen. And I blame myself now that I didn't straight away go on.